Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Our Christ light is again lit. This light can guard our hearts, protect our being, and focus our attention. May it do so for us this evening. So tonight we are again in a time of remembrance, the season of Thanksgiving. We again give thanks to that vast conscious circle of humanity of which we are a direct lineage in the teaching. To all the saints and teachers who have gone before us, who opened the door and have shown us the way, opening for us the possibility of a new earth leading to a new heaven. And in addition to their teaching, they left us a vast energetic field of impressions and influences high on the scale of being. We can breathe in these influences, take them in, and we can breathe out their love. We owe them a great deal for this. Our opening reflection tonight comes from Bernadette Roberts, a vast and complex woman, yet a very human being. She died on November 27th, 2017. Bernadette essentially gave us our annual aim, and just a little secret. She essentially is giving us our annual aim for next year as well. But this is the quote that inspired it. Christ never pointed out a path, taught any how-tos, or left any rules. Instead, he said, "I am the way." How can a person be a way? What does this mean, and how does it work? What it means is that the way it went for him is the way it goes for us. And thus it means we have to recapitulate or relive his own human spiritual journey, to live and experience life with God, just as he did. This is a way of transformation into Christ. So just as Christ gave his whole life over to the transcendent, whom he called Father, so too do we. We are to live in oneness with God immanent, whom he called his Spirit. Like Christ, we are to love God with our whole heart, mind, soul, and body. A path of love requiring a total giving of self, even unto death. Anything left behind is self. Anything given is God's. Thus, as we decrease, God increases. The more empty of self, the more room for God. Our journey, then, is one of ever-changing proportions. Less self, more God. Until in the end, there is no self at all. It has been replaced by Christ and all that Christ is. All Christ. This is the way. This is the work. This is our work. And so it is. Just a couple of notes. Next Thursday is Thanksgiving, and there will not be an email message, nor will there be a Thursday evening class. So may it be a blessed Thanksgiving for each of us, and to remember our teachers during that time who were and are pioneers in making a new earth, of which we are the fortunate recipients of. Also, just a reminder to let you know that we are coming very close to the end of our time together this year. Our last class is 3 weeks from tonight on December 10th. The last journey group will be your group that meets whatever the next time is after that Thursday night, December 10th. For instance, mine meets on Sunday, that'll be the 13th. And others will meet in Monday and Tuesday, et cetera. And that will be your last class period. And all work partner relationships for this year will come to a close on Friday, December 18th. So thank you. So now we place ourselves in that place of imminent trust. Trust and receptivity to conscious influences that have been given, that are being given, that are always being given, and particularly our own branch of that conscious circle of humanity. With back upright, a strong back, a back that is withstood and upheld our noble humanity on the way to being divine humanity, with a heart that is open and wide, compassionate and embracing all of humanity, all of creation. We breathe in deeply this gift, this precious gift of life, and we breathe out love, the evolving life of Christ in ourselves. We hand over all of the complexities of this day, all of the anxieties of our hearts, all of the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they are known and will be addressed. We lay down our constructed lives and yield to the divine human life that is our own. We stand unencumbered before God and one another, totally present now. And we can enter into our time of Lectio Divina, and I will share our reading on the screen. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, because God is love. If we love one another, God remains in us, and God's love is perfected in us. By this we know that we remain in God and God in us, because God has given to us of the Spirit a choice, an ongoing moment-to-moment inner choosing, to accept people and circumstances as they are. Over time, this becomes one state or disposition. All experience is a present flow with everyone in the universe. You are in love with the universe. You are not actively loving because you are in love. You exist in the space of conscious love, which is Christ love. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. The one who does not know, does not love, does not know God, because God is love. If we love one another, God remains in us, and God's love is perfected in us. By this we know that we remain in God and God in us, because God has given to us of the Spirit a choice, an ongoing moment-to-moment inner choosing to accept people and circumstances as they are. Over time, this becomes one state or disposition. All experience is a present flow with everyone in the universe. You are in love with the universe. You are not actively loving, but you are in love. You exist in the space of conscious love, which is Christ love. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, because God is love. If we love one another, God remains in us, and God's love is perfected in us. By this we know that we remain in God and God in us, because God has given to us of the Spirit a choice, an ongoing moment-to-moment inner choosing to accept people and circumstances as they are. Over time, this becomes one state or disposition. All experience is a present flow with everyone in the universe. You are in love with the universe. You are not actively loving, but you are in love. You exist in the space of conscious love, which is Christ love. And so it is. So now I invite you, as you are moved to do so, to share what you receive from this reading. Van or Kelly.
Just Van.
Hi, Van.
Hi. God's love is perfected in us. And I was hearing or feeling the ray of creation as it comes down to us. And yet there is a, my understanding, I'm young to all this.
Yes.
That there is a transformation that occurs that then the sun feeds off what the work we do.
Mm.
And I was struck by the idea that the perfection of God's love, to think that in and among us, it as it comes to us, it wasn't perfect.
Mm.
And maybe even Peter can give us the Hebrew or where that word Greek, what word was used there, what was perfect or perfected. But this idea that it's polished, that it's finished, that it's transformed into something that feeds back up into the ray, that it is our love, recognizing that love in each other brings that perfection. It was meaningful, and that's the transformative part.
Yes, it is meaningful. Thank you for that gift, Fan. Thank you. Billy, please.
I heard if we love one another. And what really stuck out to me was just the word "if," from this tiny little word that is actually huge. And which means I have a choice. I can choose to love. Hmm. And then what came to my mind was, well, okay, how do I do that? And of course, there are several work ideas. I also heard Ray of Creation, like Van was explaining, that also the "you owe me nothing, I owe you everything." If I truly understood, I wouldn't disagree.
Mm.
External considering. Anyway, lots of ideas that I could draw on so that I could choose to love. I just thought the word "if" was particularly, just particularly spoke to me and reminded me of my choices.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Billy. Thank you. Frank, please. You're muted, Frank. Yes.
What I heard, it was the same as what Peter spoke to us about as to his definition of love. Acceptance without judgment. An entire reading as it spoke to love seemed to say that.
Thank you. Nothing more.
That's all one has to do.
That's indeed. Thank you, Frank. Cynthia, please.
I heard that you reside in conscious love, and that reminded me of what We heard from Father Vincent the other weekend that we think that we're striving and looking for God, yet he is seeking after us, just like in the Garden of Eden when he came and said, you know, why are you hiding from me? And that gives me some sort of feeling of not needing to strive, knowing that it's available. Yes, I have effort to make, but it's so wonderful to know that it's right here, right now, always.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Cynthia. I heard something very similar. Greta, please.
I heard and felt being awash in God's love. And I also heard that we cannot actively love. And I pondered that. And it, for me, it's because God's love is not something that comes from personality. An act of true love does not come from personality. It allows, when it does come and we are able to express it, it flows through us in a way that is selfless. And I really, really like the idea of just being awash in it, in God's love.
Yes. Amen, Greta. Thank you. Thank you. We have time for a couple of more. And I am convinced that people heard something. Yes, you did, Robert.
Can you hear me, please?
Yes, yes.
I agree with Greta. We are in a milieu. We are in an environment. We are in the ocean of love that creates and sustains. That's what I felt and took from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Anyone else care to share? Gay, please.
I heard that that sentence about choice, like Billy did, ongoing, moment to moment, choosing to love. To me, it reminded me of wish or aim. To me, that would be an ultimate life aim. So my practice at the moment is the welcoming prayer every morning. So choosing to welcome everything, every person, every event, everything that comes to my life would be toward that aim. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay. And Martin, please.
Hi. I heard conscious love, and it mixed in with the email today. It just gives me this wonderful sense or separation between what my personality might call love and what my personality might even say isn't love. And there's that whole structure of just life of things that I like and don't like, which really aren't anything about real love. And it helps me to understand just the how we can be in this place of real love when I'm feeling my personality is not there. Yeah. So that helps me. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Martin. Well, thank you to everyone, for all of us, those of you who spoke, and all of us, because I know we received something from this passage. And thank you for sharing your gifts. Well, tonight we continue our journey about the way, and we've come to the most excellent way. And we have just the perfect person to lead us on the way tonight. I am delighted and very pleased to introduce Michael Begeman, who's going to take us on this journey of discovery this evening. So, Michael.
Thank you, Marianne, and good evening, everybody. He quickly looks over to see if the participant count is plummeting. So far, we're holding. We're okay. So we'll begin, as we always do, with a look at last week's homework. So last week was a discussion about paths of access. And the exercises offered were to reflect on the paths of access in your life that have brought you to the Journey School in the Fourth Way. What event or series of events awakened your magnetic center, and how did you respond? Pondering the diagram from Gnosis, and what did you receive from it? And or what has fallen away in your life since being on this path? And to reflect on the changes in your life and your being that have taken and are now taking place, and sharing them with all of the groups in your life, including this one. Hey, Van.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. The change in the paths became brought into a light from last week when I was listening to Don talk to us. At one point, he was talking about, and I may have heard it wrong, the losing of interest in some of the activities in life, some of the, maybe the hobbies we have or these things. And it struck me, this year that we have this, Monk in the World book that we're supposed to be out in the world and we're all in our homes being rather monkish at times. But this idea of giving up all the different things in life, it wasn't resonating well with me. And the way it turned over in me was that what I've discovered is that these activities that I still enjoy, the hobbies, if you will, things that I do, whether it be music or physical activities and things like that, the idea that is hopefully lost in it is the identifying in the activity, where my sense of good or bad or what have you is not hung up in the activity or the ability to do it. An example is for me, music. Play music, and when performing the music, doing it well long ago is very tied up in how I identified with myself. If the performance went well, in my judgment, so to speak, then I had this, well, I think Pam even mentioned this juice. I haven't found that word in the work yet, but I get it. Or when it didn't go well, then there was this thing that would pull my whole being down, this identification. And if something's changed a little bit, and again, I'm young on all this, that isn't there as much. The activities are thoroughly enjoyable, and they just take on such a different meaning. For in the music, for example, to work and to present it, my own judgment of what it is isn't what matters. And it's just the most blessed thing if that music comes through and somebody hears it, or it touches them, or it's gone through me and into somewhere and gone through like that. Is that's the greatest blessing of it all. Even in this second line work, which I'm trying to work right now, just the idea that it passes through, I'm not identified with it, but I still strive for it, and enjoy a bit of striving, but not for the holding myself separate from that activity in a sense. Maybe I'm not saying it right, but it's been a change, where I don't lose interest in these items, but I'm not in those, myself isn't possessed in those activities is what seems to have changed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So some of this stripping away of meaning or identification with the things that that we do is known as the night of sense. So it's that stripping away of particular identified interest in those things. But you know, there's that passage in the gospel, and we're going to come back to this later tonight, that unless you become as little children, right, that's the gateway into the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, becoming as little children. And when we look at little children who are doing what they're doing, they're just doing what they're doing. You know, they are playing at what they're, whatever it is that they're doing, they're just themselves, present to the activity. And there is not the overlay of, am I doing it well? Am I not doing it well? Do they approve of this? Do they not approve of this? All of the things that we have going on as a layer on top of our activities, children don't. And so one of the reasons, or one of the meanings, I think, of that scripture passage is us becoming more like little children is just being able to participate freely. It's playing our part, playing our role, doing it well or not, or doing it not well. And it just, so what? You know, it's just our free participation in creation. So, yeah, man, go for it.
Well, and in the same way that we experience so much joy in seeing them play, it's just always so much more fun to see somebody in enjoyment in the activity they're doing. And so hopefully that continues. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Good. Becky?
Hi.
Hi.
In answering the question about what has fallen away, or I guess falling, not completely fallen, I, this year, so much have observed the eyes in me that want to make other people the problem in my relationships. And I remember years ago, I was in a therapy group. It was a group of people. And I remember complaining about somebody going like this, with my finger. And the therapist got up and she came over and she literally turned the finger around like this. And I thought, oh, how can you do that? If you just knew, about this person, blah, blah, blah. Well, at that time I wasn't able to hear that. But I'm so grateful for this work that is helping me to see this. And this year I have been mortified and shocked sometimes. That's what I needed to be, shocked at some of the attitudes that I've had towards other people. And they're my observer has been really active. So I guess that's the thing. And I'm also very aware of some of the AA influences in my life falling away, especially watching the news. I think Peter asked us to fast watching the news, and I'm so glad he did. That has helped me so much. The last thing I want to say is what David Hawkins said at the end is straight and narrow is the path. Waste no time. And that, boy, I'll tell you, that is something that is, I've been attracted to that idea of don't waste any time. At my age, to be able to have the blessing of this work and centering prayer, I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful to the faculty and all of you. And I'm delighted to see the younger people that are doing this work. I say yay for you. You know, that is so great. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Becky. Yeah, it's wonderful seeing some of these things that begin to flop away. Right, okay. Some of these things that are dropping away. I mean, in your report, I heard, I'm having blame drop away. I'm having judgment drop away, right, and so on. So, these are things that we can actually live without just fine. And the people around us can live just fine when we drop those things as well. It's reducing the sorrow of our common Father, because we are sowing less and less of that stuff in there. And Pamela and I are big fans of David Hawkins. It's part of our morning practice reading, one of his books aloud to one another. And yes, time is of the essence, and we have received these teachings, each of us, regardless of whether we're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, we have received them perfectly in time. It's like what Hawkins would say is that our karmic propensities have drawn these to us at exactly the right moment for us to make maximum use of them. So it's wonderful that we're all here together. I mean, we're all being given these things at the same time. We're all really in the same, I don't know what we're in the same of. We're in the same mess. And we're given the same tools to, to learn and to grow. Yeah. Pam?
Hi.
Hi. That Pam.
Pam.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. I now have been away from the Church of Conscious Harmony physically twice as long as I was there. And I remember when I was preparing to move and I was panicked. And Barbara said to me, God's going with you. And I thought, what a concept. And what I have learned is something that has been in the teachings this last week or so. And that is, once you are on this path, there's no turning back. The work has held me through all of this, is as strong, if not stronger. And it's helped tremendously that I can attend these Zoom classes and see the familiar faces, not just hear the familiar voices, because that is a lot that has sustained me over time. But so much of it is just the work ideas coming up over and over in my life situations. And when, something arises, the work is there to meet me. And, there's no turning back.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. It's so wonderful having you remain an active and vibrant part of the community and an example of really putting the work on. I mean, on these, some of these Thursdays, you have shared very vulnerably some of the, some of the challenges that you've been up against this year and how the work has really been a rope. And your witness is truly inspiring. So thank you so much, Pam.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, Martin, what do you got? Oh, hey, Tamara.
Hey. So is it unmuted? Oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, good. So I was like Pam, I was thinking how much this is a part of our life now, and I don't even know what my life would be like if I didn't have the work and Thomas Keating and Centering Prayer and the church. So it's been a real blessing for us, for me. And also, I'd like to say that if you talk about things that are drifting away because of the work and my participation in the work, it reminds me of how much I have given up as far as controlling things. I always wanted to control everything. And it's been such a blessing for me. And also I think for my loved ones as well, to just know that I don't have control over these things, and just have trust in the process and trust in God. And it's just been a lovely way for me to live my life, and a big change in the way I live my life. So just trusting and letting go and just trusting in the process. And it's been, you know, and they also, as far as like, I feel like every day, everything I do is kind of a prayer. You know, I've got the work tools, which is great. And so I use those, every day, and they're a constant reminder to me that I can work. But then also it's just lovely to feel like, I'm kind of I'm connected to everything. And just to have that prayer all day, every day, everything I do. So it's been a lovely process for me. So,
thank you, Tamara. And what a beautiful witness to say that your activities of the day are a prayer. You know, entering into a day with prayer, but doing things as a prayer. You know, we've had these annual aims that Mary Ann's fingerprints are all over them for years and years and years now. And I think the favorite one of all of the years was called A Life in Christ. And every month we were looking at a different aspect of just day-to-day living. You know, the things that we do, that we have to do as people, you know, in this society, on this planet, as parents and workers and so on, but how to do those things as Christ, or how to manifest Christ in those activities of life. And I hear you doing that when you say that you are engaging in the activities of life as a prayer. And God knows the world needs that. One of my favorite quotations is from a Swiss mystic. His name is Maurice Zundel. And he says, we are Christ for others. And that God has entrusted God's self into our hands. That God has entrusted itself into my hands to be visible, apparent, manifest on planet Earth what a responsibility, a privilege, an opportunity, you know, so, yeah, thanks. Don't stop. Lisa Morgan in a tiny home out in somewhere. Kingsland.
Out in the backwoods.
Right.
What I have reflected back, I started coming to the church in 2004. And one of the main distinct characteristics of my personality, which is to compare myself with others, that has significantly dropped away. I won't say that it's gone. When it does rise up, I'm more aware of it. I kind of get it, that bad taste in my mouth. I know that it's happening, and now I can, you know, bring the work up to combat that, if you will, or to self-remember. But it's interesting reflecting back to comparing my journey with others in church, comparing how I share to other people in yoga class, looking around, am I doing it better than others? When I would read in magazines, people that I knew in Austin that were having successes with their businesses, you know, there'd be a sense of envy and jealousy in me. And, you know, a lot of that has dropped away. And it's just such a liberating feeling and such deep gratitude that those anchor points of this one's personality can soften and can move on and get to a place of love and celebrating others and not worrying how this one's looking to others. Yeah. So that's been a big thing for me since joining the church.
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, you know, in the work, we don't work for results. And that doesn't mean that results don't come. But usually the thing that is working for results is one of the things that should be dropping away along the process. It's one of the crazy things about this this work. Sometimes we don't know what has dropped away until somebody points it out to us. I remember after I had been around the church for about 5 years and have been doing this work, Jeff Janung, so this is Donald's brother who used to be around the church. He and I were walking down the courtyard toward each other like this, and he just put his hand up to stop me. And I stopped, and he looked at me, and he said, Michael Begeman, you are living proof that transformation is possible. Now, I didn't know if I should thank him or punch him in the nose. At the moment, it's like one of those backhanded compliments, I guess. So I didn't either. We just, you know, and passed on. But it was one of those moments where something must have happened that I was unaware of in my life. And that's probably the best. You know, it's God's secret work in us. And, you know, the things that we have so much of our attention on are surface level presentation, you know, our personality. And, you know, that goes on. I don't know. We have to just look at Bernadette Roberts to see that, you know, she still had a particular presentation in the world that was, some people might consider it to have been abrasive. Thomas Keating had his own presentation in the world that was not flawless. And all of us. So, yeah, I just trust that God is doing the work inside of us to release what needs to be released. And, you know, the user interface, you know, it's our spacesuit. It's what allows us to go around in space-time and interact. And so long as we do no harm, it's okay. Her.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Kathy.
I know it is.
So it's a profound homework assignment, and I thought, gosh, I don't think I could share without getting into story, but I'm going to do my best. So there's so many stories that bring us to the Church of Conscious Harmony or to the work. And I would say that coming to the church was brought on by a self-improvement project. Yeah. And I was problem solving and was failing. And I was putting in so much effort. And I thought, I know what is wrong. I need a spiritual practice. And if I have a spiritual practice, I'll be able to solve this problem. So I came to the church, and one of the first things I partook in was contemplative prayer. So I want to bring that up because that's really, like, there's no way to, I guess, continue a self-improvement project if you're practicing contemplative prayer, because it's all about letting go of the self. So, but then the work, there's so much value in the core three practices, the self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. And all of that is very much married to the contemplative practice. So what fell away for me was stop trying to control your circumstances and stop trying to solve problems that are beyond your means, and have a little faith and let go. So that really did transform my life. And it was sort of dragged through the mud for a while and then righted itself. But the only way to the place I am today was to experience the suffering as a form of payment, the shame, humiliation, and guilt, and then to realize I could let go of all of that. And really, non-identification is a really powerful tool in terms of accepting our own humanity. I'm flawed. Oh, well, that's not me. That is not I. But yes, this one is flawed. It was also good to, I guess, learn about life happens the only way it can. So being able to let go of what if I could have, what if I had only done things differently, and just to accept that, oh, life happens the only way it can, and here I am today, being the best me I can, and having the closest relationship I can to God and therefore to others. Yeah, so I'm full of joy and just gratitude, and all of the negative energy that brought me here and seemed to heighten as I did the work has dissipated, and I'm just at peace. And so those two of the things that I was able to let go of was just the negative energy. I paid with my own suffering.
Indeed you did. Kathy, you are living proof that transformation is possible. So, yeah, so thank you. And, you know, flawed, what an interesting word, right? So there's a judgment that's embedded in that. Flawed. Maybe not. And for whatever foibles brought us here, we were completely innocent. We were completely innocent in those things. We were, in the same sense that things were happening in the only way that they can now, that was true then too. There was a Michael and a Kathy 10 years ago who had been raised in the way that they had been raised, exposed to the things that they had been exposed to, who came in with whatever karmic propensities or burdens that they had, you know, and here we are. And here we are. So just, there is such a gentle way that we can hold our past. And should. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Ken, Sandra, Greta, Deborah, just hold on to it. Because we have places to go yet. So, if you read today's email, you know that the subject of the night is conscious love. And we will start with a poem by Hafiz. The subject tonight is love. And for tomorrow night as well. And as a matter of fact, I know of no better topic for us to discuss until we all die. So may it be so. So tonight, conscious love, an exploration of ideas. And as I was thinking about this, as I was pondering this, so there's two words here, conscious and love, and you really can't talk about conscious love until you unpack both of these components of conscious love. So we're going to make a little run down looking at both of these elements of conscious love to expand our understanding and distinctions and understanding of them. The Gospel of Mark tells us the greatest commandment, and we're all familiar with this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and all your mind and all your strength. And the second is this, to love your neighbor as yourself. And he said, no other commandment is greater than these. Our teacher, the source of the work, Gurdjieff, also said, it would be very silly for God to demand from man what he cannot give. So it may seem at first glance that this greatest commandment is seemingly impossible. It's like, how on earth, really? I mean, loving the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, strength, mind, and loving my neighbor as fully. You know, how? It is a possibility. Also, just before we go deeper, these topics have been the focus of a number of sermons that Peter delivered over the last couple of months. So many of you I know, watch the Sunday services, but for those of you who haven't or don't, they're all online on the church website, and we can get some deeper teaching and additional insights from Peter from those. So let's begin with taking a look at consciousness. And the work defines four stages of consciousness, which it calls sleep and waking sleep and self-remembering and objective consciousness. And sleep, I've been coached to turn off screen sharing from time to time. So sleep is what you think it would be. It's when we close our eyes and fall asleep and dream. Waking sleep is the state the work says that most of humanity goes around in. It's when we are up and we're animated, but from a consciousness standpoint, the work accuses us of being asleep. There is the third state of consciousness, which is self-remembering. So in that triad that Kathy spoke of, the self-observe, non-identify, and self-remember, this is where we become, where we have a heightened level of consciousness and awareness about ourself and others. And then objective consciousness, the fourth level of consciousness, is a type of consciousness that is what to say about it. It is awake. It is aware. It is present to what is without story. It is just that present awareness to the reality of existence in God on planet Earth. So the first two, sleep and waking sleep, these are a certainty. They're given by life. All of us get to experience those. All, however many billions of us there are on planet Earth now, get to experience that. Self-remembering and objective consciousness are in the realm of the possible evolution of each of us and of humankind. They actually require something to get into those realms of consciousness, and that's what we're all about here, right? So at the end of the homily every Sunday, the minister blesses our tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love. And I have heard this, I don't know how many hundreds of times over decades at the Church of Conscious Harmony. The victory of consciously chosen love. I mean, that one could take that phrase, the victory of consciously chosen love, and use that as my aim for the next year or the next 5 years. That what I aim for is the victory of consciously chosen love in each of the moments of each of my life, right? So this consciously chosen love is different than the love that is, that evokes automatically that, keeping track of who was sharing during the Lexio, Billy, Van, Frank, Greta, Bob, and others. And I mean, you all were all, you know, just creating, the boundary around what this topic is. And it's about this consciously chosen love. So, you know, the work says that higher emotional and higher intellectual centers are always speaking to us and we just can't hear them. So I have a theory, and that is that sometimes higher intellectual and higher emotional centers are speaking to us very, 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 very overtly and plainly. You know, so here we are. You know, this is a sign in somebody's front yard on the walk that Pamela and I take. The universe is speaking to us. You know, this is a sign that was out in front of El Arroyo. For those of you who are not living in Austin, El Arroyo is a Tex-Mex restaurant that has been around for forever. And every day they have some new thing, usually pretty humorous, on their marquee. But we were walking along and says, oh, we can't control what's going on, but we can keep choosing kindness. And here it is. I mean, this is consciously chosen love right here. It's a call to choose. And I think Billy used the word choose, that kindness, choose that word, choose that love. It is in the moment where we have different opportunities that are available to us, love, not love. And what do we step into? The Gurdjieff Journal put it this way. Not surprisingly, just as we attribute to ourselves that we have a real I and a free will and the capacity to do, we also believe that we can love. But how can a sleeping person love? Isn't the love we experience a sleep love, a personal love? When Hindus meet, they say Shanti or Namaste, which means I honor the light within you. Not you as a person, but the light, the truth, the being that is manifested. True love, spiritual love, is impersonal. True love or spiritual love is impersonal. So we're about to go into some of the aspects or some of the different types of love. Peter spoke about some of these in the sermons. But who was it? It was, I forgot who shared earlier. Don't take it personally. Names are not my strongest point. Becky was talking about being immersed in love. And so there is this kind of love. There's a kind of love that we do. There is a kind of love which is relational and responsive, and it's me and you or me and something. But there's still this me and something, right? There's that relationality built into it. Then there's another flavor or nature of love, which is being in love. Now, we've all mostly, hopefully, experienced being in love with another. That's not what I'm talking about. There's being in love, like being in a swimming pool. There's being in love where I am drenched in it, where I am saturated in it, where we are dripping with love, where we open our eyes and love is running over. We open our mouths and it's there. That love is the thing which is manifested by my being, kind of going back to that Maurice Zundel quote, that we are God for others, you know, that God has entrusted itself into our hands, and that and that trust is in fact you know, being manifested. So in the Gospels, there are three types of love that are generally spoken of. And it's eros, which is the erotic or, there's philia, which is more of a brotherly type of love, love for friends, love for family. And then there's this agape, which is the love of God or God's love manifesting in us. And, you know, we've all heard that gospel where Peter and Jesus are going back and forth. Jesus says, do you love me? And Peter says, of course I love you. And Peter says, you know, feed my sheep. And, you know, they go back and forth. And, you know, Peter's getting irritated because Jesus keeps asking him the same question. But in the Greek, Jesus and Peter are using different words for this. It's like Jesus, you know, the ontological, who's in ontological union with the endless creator, is sitting there saying, you know, Peter, you know, do you love this? You know, and it's like Peter is picking up his phone and hitting the like button. You know, it's like two different things that are going on here with these different types of love. Unfortunately, in our language, we just have this word love, but there are these distinctions of of love, which are clear in the Gospels. The work tries to make them a little bit more clear in our language. The work, this is not one-to-one, but the work has instinctual love, which is a biological love. There is an emotional love, which we get bound into with other people. This is the I love you and you love me. Emotional love, one of the qualities of emotional love in the work is that it often turns into its opposites. If we go back to the teachings that we had of the law of seven, there are these diagrams that show a process that ends up turning on itself. And this emotional love often turns on itself or becomes its opposite. And it's because the basis of emotional love is usually getting two entities who are trying to get their needs met through one another. So, I mean, it's also the basis of imago relationships that, it's a whole other talk. But if you have, you know, two beings who are basically in a relationship in order to satisfy mutual, you know, complementary needs, that's fine for a while until one of the persons grows and doesn't need that. And then all of a sudden I'm going in this direction and this person still, you know, has a need that wants to be met, starts to drive this away, and we end up with the mess that we have on our hands with many relationships. So that's the hazard of emotional love. The last type of love that the work gives us is conscious love, which is rare and is what we are working toward and what we're exploring tonight. Again, to the victory of consciously chosen love, this is our destiny as human beings. That, I mean, Bernadette said, as it goes for Christ, so it goes for us. So it's actually our destiny to be in that ontological union with our endless creator. Christ said, love your enemies, but how can we love our enemies when we cannot even love our friends, right? This is a wonderful quote from Uspensky from In Search of the Miraculous. You know, he was noting the terror of the situation because the love of our friends is that emotional love at best. And something needs to evolve. We need to evolve into the capacity for conscious love to love as Christ does. Some wisdom from Snowmass. So there was a time in my life when my wife and I were formed up like this. And this is not my current wife. This is my previous wife. And she decided that she wanted to go off and do something else with her life. We'll just leave it at that. And I couldn't be part of that. I could not stay in the relationship with the choice that she wanted to make. So I was on retreat at Snowmass. There's this wisdom figure, Pat Johnson, who was retreat leader. And she and I went on a long walk and talk one morning. You know, January in Snowmass, it's cold. And we bundled up like the Michelin Man and we were walking down the road. You know, and I was pouring out my heart and my woes and making my case about how right I was and how wrong she was and all of those things. And we get back to the door of the retreat house. And she turns and she just squares off with me, you know, and she puts her hands on my shoulder. And I was expecting her to agree with me and say, this is what you should do with Susan and all this kind of stuff. And what she said is, Michael, you don't have to love what she's doing, but you have to love her. Now, that was a shock, right? That was a shock because all of a sudden it was peeling away, separating love of a person from are they fulfilling some desire that I have, some need that I have? Some, are they doing are they behaving in a way which is consistent with the things that I would like? Or is there a way for me to, and what Pat was calling me to, is to love this person despite that? To find, to grow my love up into a new type of love where I could love the person regardless of the behavior and choices. Now, we still got a divorce. I didn't want my life tied in a knot with these other things. That was the right thing to do from a life perspective. But Susan and I have, you know, but we found love beyond that form. You know, and she and I are still wonderful friends. And when she comes here, she stays with me and Pamela. And, you know, and it's, we got through that. But I have to thank Pat Johnson for saying, for squaring off and calling me to a higher level of love than what I had known of before. So a few weeks ago, Beverly McCune was talking to us about the food diagrams and was showing us, walking us through some of these diagrams that Ouspensky originally drew in Search of the Miraculous, and Nicol repeated in the commentaries. And was talking about the digestion of impressions. So before you all are reaching for your oxygen mask here, I need to say that Ouspensky drew all of these diagrams before the age of PowerPoint. So it's great because you have me tonight to upgrade some of these diagrams. So I'm working on a book called Work Diagrams for Dummies. Here is the first one. You see that up at the top there's a, I already have secured a quote from Marianne endorsing this book, so it must be good. Okay. So this is a little teaching on the first conscious shock. So in those food diagrams, impressions come in. So we have the outer world and we have our inner state. So in the outer world, impressions come in and they land on our inner state. You know, they hit on our eyeball in lightning speed. It that gets telegraphed into this wonderful electrochemical computer that we have called the brain. And in life, the relating force, that is the thing that contextualizes this impression that comes in, are our wants and our needs and our frustrations and our desires and our wounds and our pride and our vanity and what we learn from our society and from our family and what we've heard in the media and all of this stuff. Those are all of the things that have conditioned the plastic brain that we were born with that really can't tell what is true from what is false. And that produces two things. One is that it produces the self-reinforcing cycle of thoughts. So we all have the experience of some impression comes in, and then for the next week, we're sitting there, we're ruminating about it. We're thinking about it. It's going around and around and around and around and around, and we get more and more right and more righteous about it and so on. And if we really let go, then that turns into a reaction that goes back out into the outer world. But all of this is a mechanical cycle, and what is shaping it is all of this stuff over here on the right-hand side. This is called life being the third force, or life being the relating force to the impressions of, well, the impressions of life that are coming in. So again, back to that quote, unless you become as little children, the thing that that Van was pointing us to, that all of these things over here in the red box, little children don't have those. They don't have the list of needs and requirements and frustrations and desires and wounds and pride and vanity that we all have acquired. So without these things, what might we be in the world when impressions come in. So when the work is third force, which is what we're all practicing here, the same impressions come in, they all go into the inner space of the brain. But with the work as third force, we have a different set of relating principles. And a number of you have mentioned many of these tonight, and more of these are in the email that you got today. We have self-remembering, external considering. We have the principles of the Beatitudes, other be influences. We have real wish and aim. We have Byron Katie's four questions, the first of which, is this true? Second is, can I absolutely know that this is true? I got the Beatitudes in there again because these form, so this little splotch here is the first conscious shock. So this is impressions coming in, and the work principles are there to meet them. And when the work principles, rather than life, meet the impressions that come in, something different manifests. So there is not the old purple response that we had, but now we have the blue response because it is shaped by some of these principles and some of these teachings. In fact, the response, going back to the world, could be no response. We may just sit here and digest the impression that came in and realize that whatever it is that came in, whatever the arrow is that, you know, came in and stung me, is there for my own transformation. And my job is to digest that. I don't know if you could tell, but the color of the brain just changed. So let's go back here. So we had our old purple brain. And after doing this for a while, guess what? It actually starts to change the programming, the set of thoughts that are going on in our brain. And this is part of the transformational process. This is us being transformed into the mind of Christ over time. Now, a fair question at this point is, well, what does this have to do with conscious love? Wait a minute, Michael. The topic is conscious love. You're talking about conscious love, and now you're talking about the first conscious shock. What gives? And what gives is that little yellow splotch right there. That is where everything happens. That is all of the work and all of the gospels coming together right there to change, to transform us. So here we are as our mechanical beings in the world living, in those first two levels of consciousness, asleep and waking sleep. And what is it that kicks us into the other levels of consciousness that allow us to love in a new way? And it is all of these things. It is all of these work principles that many of you have noted tonight that are in the email, that are on that list on the right. It is the principles of the Beatitude. It is being meek. It is being humble. It is letting go of things. It is turning the other cheek. All of these teachings from the Gospels, all of these teachings from the work, all of them are just doing one little itty-bitty thing in each of us, and that is interrupting the way that we think. And instead of having some mechanical thought thing that goes, firing off because something came in, like a pinball machine, something else manifests. And in a sense, it becomes less and less important what's going on out here. Because what is going on in here is, it's kind of like Tamara said, my activity is a prayer, in this day, it's a prayer. And it's like, what is manifesting is Christ consciousness. What is manifesting is God in a Michael suit, in a Kathy suit, in a Pam suit, in a Martin suit, in a Lisa suit, in all of these. So that's why I wanted to talk about that first conscious shock, because that is the point where everything happens. Without it, we're lost. With it, everything is possible, I think. quote from Oraj, all love comes from something higher than oneself or the world. Gurdjieff says we can only strive to be able to be Christians. Going to church doesn't do it, but the strive and the struggle that we are all engaged in can produce that. And Nichols says the conscious love clearly requires consciousness, and we have all listened to some of the means of attaining it, like tonight we have. One last brief story. There was a time when somebody who was very close to me broke the trust, and there was this betrayal. And it was one of those things that just, you know, cut to the core. And I didn't know what to do. Didn't know how to put this thing back together. And I went and I sat with Barbara and kind of poured out my heart and my story, and kind of like 20 years before that, when I was having the same kind of conversation with Pat Johnson, I was expecting, you know, well, Michael, you know, that person really did do a bad thing. And, you know, here are the, you know, you might consider talking to, about this, that, and the other with this person, and, you know, to try to put things back together and get it straight. Barbara did not do that. She said, forgive. And I said, why or how can I forgive? And she said, because you can. Now that stopped me in my tracks. Forgive because you can. So that was this movement from the linear to what Hawkins calls the nonlinear. So in the world of the linear, there is trying to get things right with other people. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about this, and we're going to have a new set of agreements. And, you know, I mean, we've all done this, right? You know, this is territory that we've all been through. And what Barbara was suggesting was, no, I forgive because I have the capacity to forgive. Not I, but Christ in I has the capacity to forgive. So just like Pat Johnson's advice to me, Barbara was calling me to relate to the world, to this other person, and to the circumstances at a different level, not at the level of the world, but at a different level of consciousness. It was a big swallow to do it, but I did. It worked out. So here's the concluding slide. That is my dog and teacher, Daisy. We were on a walk last week and just hanging on the fence next to the park were the words, choose love. So that word choice was in the first sharing that I think we had from Billy, and it is in the concluding words or utterance or being from my teacher, Daisy. As Marianne would say, may it be so. Back to you.
Thank you, Michael. In fact, the word choose was in our Lexio reading. So that must be the word of the night, choose. It's a very appropriate word as we head into Thanksgiving as well. So our closing word actually is from Rodney Collin. We have to connect everything. If we want our house to be harmonious, we have to connect the things in it with their purpose and with their surroundings. The key to everything we do is attention to the intention. then the smallest detail will be right, both in relation to our physical surroundings and our actions. Then we will never do anything to impress. Let not thy left hand know what their right hand is doing. Means if we do something good, we should do it for the sake of the good, and not that men may say that we are good. Everything must be done with the heart, sincerely. And so it is. So let us join together and affirming and praying aloud wherever we are. The prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake. And watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen, and happy Thanksgiving.